This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Gay actors are beginning to come out of the closet. It might surprise you to hear that it may have been easier to be openly gay in the Hollywood of the 20s. A new book looks at gay life in early Hollywood by examining the life of silent film star William Haynes. My guest is the author, William Mann. He says Haynes' story is the story of the institutionalization of the Hollywood closet. It's the story of how an industry changed and how in the 30s a community of artists turned its back on its own in the face of organized traditionalist pressure. Mann writes, those who played the game were rewarded with stardom and protection. Cary Grant, Robert Taylor, Barbara Stanwyck, Rock Hudson. Those who refused, people like Billy Haynes, were ushered out. Since few people remember William Haynes' movie roles, I asked biographer William Mann to place Haynes.
He was actually the number one box office star in 1930. You know, that's what, you know, people tend to, if they remember Billy Haynes at all, they tend to think of him as a second-rate actor or a co-star to some of the bigger stars. But he actually was the number one box office star in 1930. And for a few years before that and after that, he was certainly in the top 10.
Now, some of his movies have real macho kind of titles like A Man's Man and Tell It to the Marines.
Right.
Did he play real macho roles?
No, you know, what's interesting is in the 1920s, the leading men in Hollywood were not, they weren't macho. They really weren't about being masculine and aggressive. They were, you know, when you think about the 1920s and the images of masculinity in Hollywood, you think of Rudolph Valentino and you think of Wallace Reed. And, you know, they're slightly less macho, slightly more effeminate. Billy Haynes was part of that tradition. And, you know, there was no intimation that they might have been gay on screen, but they were certainly the leading man. They were certainly the matinee idol. But there was the aggressive, strident masculinity that came to popularize the movies in the 1930s really wasn't in evidence in the 1920s.
Did most people in Hollywood know that Billy Haynes was gay?
Yes, yes.
And did he try to cover it up?
No. You know, what's interesting is that in the 1920s, being gay was just part of an actor's resume. There were a number of stars who were, in a sense, openly gay. You know, using that term is a bit anachronistic because of, you know, the construct was very different. But they lived lives that were authentic in ways that stars, even just a decade later, weren't able to live, because the 1920s, the early 1930s, was a time in Hollywood where there was a greater openness for those people who lived on the edge. You know, we had people who were political radicals. We had people who heterosexual couples living without marriage, and Hollywood was open for that. It was a real haven for that kind of bohemian lifestyle. So Billy Haynes was certainly openly gay in that sense to the studio chiefs and the studio publicists, but certainly not to the public at large, because there wasn't such an identity yet to be openly gay about.
So when he set up house with his lover, Jimmy, there weren't studio heads or publicity heads. He said, you can't do that?
And that's what makes him so significant. And that's really what makes him a mirror of the times that he lived in, which, you know, his story is interesting in and of itself, but it really takes on relevance when you look at him in context with his times, because, you know, at the same time he and Jimmy moved in together, so did Greta Garbo and John Gilbert. And neither couple was married. Neither raised eyebrows in the front offices at MGM. There was an understanding at that time that there was a distinction between a star's private life and his public image.
Well, how did MGM's publicity department deal with the fact that Billy Haynes was gay and he was living with his male lover?
Well, there's been a number of funny stories where they tried early on to pair him up with movie actresses. And, you know, Billy Haynes, just unlike a lot of them, you know, he just chose not to play that game. He wouldn't go out on the photo op dates. He didn't appear at premieres with some beautiful young starlet on his arm. He would escort Polly Moran, who was about 30 years older than he was, and Bucktooth. She was one of the popular comedians of the day. And he would turn the studio publicists' attempts to link him with female stars by saying, well, I'm going to marry Polly Moran. And the press loved it. The press ate it up. The studios, I think, at you know, by 1926, 1927, had really kind of thrown up their hands and said, let this guy be who he is. It seems to be working. Nobody's, you know, questioning him at this point. And they just let him do what he wanted to do.
Were the studios encouraging any of the gay actors to embark on cover marriages?
Oh, sure. But you have to understand that that really began to happen later on. When we saw the coming of the production code in 1930, there was a greater sense that the excesses of the Roaring Twenties was really over, and that the public mood was starting to change. We also saw the Depression hit at the same time. By 1934, when the production code was given its teeth and was began to be enforced by the studios in a way of avoiding government regulation, there was a real strict adherence to a certain image and a certain ideal. Stars had to change their images. Even directors had to change their images. The on-screen content was cleaned up, and so was the off-screen lives. People like Clara Bow weren't able to survive. You know, this wasn't just a this didn't just affect gay stars. It affected anyone who lived outside of a strictly defined set of rules. And by that point, I think we began to see some stars come in who felt they had to toe the line at the studio, and the studio's attitude towards the stars changed.
If you're just joining us, my guest is William Mann, author of the new book Wisecracker, a biography of William Haynes, who Mann describes as Hollywood's first openly gay star. One of the biggest threats to Billy Haynes' image while he was a film star was when Eleanor Glynn, who I guess was a Hollywood columnist, wrote that he didn't have it. You know, there were actors who had it and actors who didn't have it. And she said that Billy Haynes didn't, and neither did Ronald Colman, and neither did Raymond Navarro. What did the studio interpret that as meaning, and how did they try to counteract that?
Well, that tapped into all of the studio's fears, because here, after all, was their top box office star who was gay, who was not being linked with actresses in print, who was not being seen around town with the starlet on his arm. And while they, you know, walked along with him for a while because it worked, it seemed to work, when Glynn did this, they said, okay, everything's going to fall apart now. We've got Eleanor Glynn, who had written the novel It and 3 Weeks and a number of other bestsellers of the time, and was really considered an arbiter of social taste and sexuality in Hollywood. And when she said that Billy Haynes didn't have it, as well as Raymond Navarro, who was also gay, as well as Ronald Colman, who was slightly more effeminate than she liked, they reacted with the sense that, you know, okay, everybody's going to discover him now. It's all going to come tumbling down. Of course, Billy then went into Louis B. Mayer and said, well, you know, don't worry about it. He said, of course I have it. He says, I have appeal to both sexes, which Mayer, of course, just wasn't able to tolerate.
You say that things started changing for him and for gay actors in Hollywood in the early 30s. One of the reasons why was the production code. What was it about the code that affected the private lives of gay actors?
Well, the code was a list of do's and don'ts that the studios adopted voluntarily to avoid government regulation and government censorship. And ostensibly, the code only affected on-screen content. It was only supposed to be for the regulation of what the movies could show on the screen. However, the code was part of a greater cultural and political shift in Hollywood in the 1930s, indeed in the country in the early 1930s, with the coming of the Depression, with a greater movement of immigrants who were the base of the Catholic Church, which was the base of the reform movement in Hollywood. And so what we began to see was that the off-screen lives of the stars were also coming under scrutiny. We see that a number of stars were forced to change their images, were forced to fit into a specific rule, a specific set of definitions. For the gay stars, this meant that a number of them got married and a number of them ended relationships that they were having, because suddenly the whole dynamic shifted. We had the press changed their relationship with the studios. We had the stars change their relationship with the studios. And the public began to recognize this change as well.
Well, how did Billy Haynes react to this new set of guidelines you're expected to follow in your private life.
He, alone among his contemporaries, he refused to play the game. He was, he may have considered it. You know, what's interesting is Anita Page, who I had the great privilege of meeting in Hollywood. She's one of the few silent stars still living. She's a lovely lady, and she told me that in 1932, Billy asked her to marry him. Well, at first I tended to brush it off as some kind of Hollywood myth, but then I began to think about the timing was absolutely right, that Billy would have at that point perhaps considered playing the game, because all around him his contemporaries were. They were fitting into the new images that the code was demanding. Cary Grant was getting married. Randolph Scott got married. Raymond Navarro allowed himself to be linked in the press with Myrna Loy. The game was suddenly up for grabs, and Billy Haynes may indeed have considered playing it. Anita Page turned him down, which I think was lucky for both of them. And it allowed Billy to continue to live a life that was more authentic and more honest than any of his contemporaries. And for many, many, many years after him, he lived the most open and most honest life that I could find in the stories of Hollywood movie stars. He went on to live with his partner for 50 years. He did not play the game that the studio was in, that the postcode studios were trying to put upon him.
Do you think he was punished for not playing the game? He was released from the MGM studio in 1934. How much do you think that had to do with his refusal to play the game?
I think it had a lot to do with that. You know, I think what's important is that Billy Haynes wanted to stay with the studio at all costs, and he knew at this point that his screen image was in need of revamping. They were in the midst of trying that with some success. He would have gone into supporting roles. He would have taken character roles. It's far too easy to say that his screen image just simply didn't live up to the times and he didn't change with the times. He would have moved into character parts as some of his contemporaries like Edmund Lowe, who did get married and play the game. Billy Haynes felt that by 1934, he wasn't going to change his life and kick his lover out after living with him for 6 years. He loved this man very much. And so because of that, there was no room for him left. Hollywood had changed so dramatically. There was no place for the kind of lifestyle he lived, because the fan magazines at this point were going to start asking questions that they wouldn't have done even 5 years before.
Do you know what the official reason was for getting rid of him at MGM?
The official reason was simply that his contract had run out and wasn't renewed, and that he was listed as being at large. Of course, no one's contract was not renewed for just simply letting it lapse. There was always a reason to renew or not to renew a contract. I think what's also indicative is that his agent attempted to get him parts at other studios. And Billy assumed that even if it was a character part, that he would have gotten a part at perhaps Paramount or Columbia or Universal. None of these major studios picked up his option. He ended up at Mascot, which was one of the lowest of the Poverty Row studios. They're the only ones who were able to who would be willing to take him on. That says something right there, that the studios had changed enough that they weren't interested in picking up this guy who, just a few years before, had been the top box office star in America.
My guest is William Mann, the author of a new biography of William Haynes, who was an early gay film star. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is William Mann, the author of Wisecracker, The Life and Times of William Haynes, Hollywood's first openly gay star. After Billy Haynes was let go by MGM, he started a new career, and you say he actually really found his calling.
Right.
Interior design for the stars. He did
right.
Carol Lombard's home and Joan Crawford's home and the homes of other Hollywood stars. It's funny, it almost sounds like a joke. You know, what did the gay actor do when he
right,
was kicked
right,
back by
exactly,
the studio? He went into
right,
interior decoration.
Right. He may have been the source of that stereotype, right?
That's right. But what impact did he have on Hollywood style as an interior decorator?
Well, it was an enormous impact. He really changed the very look of Hollywood. You know, Hollywood in the early days was you know, excessive and gaudy. You have to remember these people were nouveau riche. These were people who came in and bought every trend that came along. You know, Joan Crawford had black velvet dancing girls and you know, dolls with chickens and that laid eggs actually on the table. You know, it was terribly tacky, terribly gaudy, and it was Billy Haynes who brought a sense of sophistication. You know, by the end of the 30s, almost every major Hollywood star and director had their house done by Billy Haynes, and he moved into Los Angeles society through the 40s and the 50s. The very look of Hollywood itself, he changed how the film colony thought of itself. I think he gave them a sense of style and class that had been missing before that.
It sounds like later on in his life he was on the outs of gay society in Hollywood, that you say he became a sloppy drunk. He was implicated in a scandal. It was said that his lover had brought a six-year-old boy into the house, and there were accusations about what had gone on there. And that kind of moved Haynes out into the margins of Hollywood gay society.
Yes, in fact, he had started out as being an integral part of the Hollywood gay subculture in the 1930s. He was best friends with George Cukor. He was close with Cole Porter, and there was a real sense of a very vibrant nightlife in the 1930s and 1940s, also again contrary to public opinion. By the middle part of the decade of the 1940s, actually after the war, there was a number of falling outs that he had with some of these key figures in the gay subculture. And I think part of it was that, you know, at this point, the idea of being gay in Hollywood had changed radically from it had, you know, just 20 years before in the 1920s. There was a much greater reluctance to act out. There was this new decorum of you know, we have to prove that we are as gentle-mannered as the rest of them. And so Cukor, Porter, these were people who set a great stand on being proper. Billy Haynes never did. And I think the interesting thing is that by 1945, he had pushed himself away from that crowd as much as they had pushed themselves away from him. That, you know, he just represented a part of their lives that he felt they were a little too flamboyant. He could get drunk. He could get outrageously campy. And that unnerved some of these social arbiters in the gay subculture.
One of the things that surprised you about Billy Haynes was that although he lived what was a pretty openly gay life for his time, some of his best friends were later supporters of McCarthyism. They were anti-gay, and you include in that list Ronald and Nancy Reagan.
That's
now, I know
right.
you got an interview with Nancy Reagan for your mm-hmm. book. Was she able to address that?
Mrs. Reagan was very clear when I asked her if that was ever a problem for some of her husband's supporters. It was obvious that there might have been a conflict in that at the same time that then-Governor Reagan was firing his gay staffers because of a potential scandal in 1967, that at the very same time she and the governor were having regular dinners at Billy and Jimmy's house. I asked her if there was ever a conflict there, if there was ever any pressure from her husband's supporters, and she said emphatically no, there was never a problem. When I tried to push and find out more about this, she just insisted that there was just never a problem. My sense is that, you know, there probably wasn't a problem. There was the social constructs of homosexuality were very different, and even in the 1960s. This is pre-Stonewall. Billy Haynes had little to identify with these gay liberation supporters. He identified more with the Los Angeles upper crust. And so there was really no sense that he was part of that underworld. Of course, I imagine there must have been some conflicts for him, that he must have had to reconcile this in some ways. And I do talk a little bit about that. Some of his friends have talked to me about the struggles that they went through at that time. But there was people treated each other in Billy's world as individuals. And I think, you know, he felt that that Nancy and Ronald Reagan treated them with respect, and he returned that respect.
We're starting to see some actors in film and on TV who are gay come out. What do you think the climate is like now for people who are out in Hollywood?
I think it's gotten an awful lot better, even in the last 5 years. You know, I think what's so interesting and so ironic about Billy Haynes' story is that actors and directors didn't become progressively more open as being gay since his time, but they became progressively more closeted until very, very recently. I think within the last few years, when we've seen Ellen DeGeneres and Katie Lang and Dan Butler and a number of stars who have come out and shown that they continue to have successful careers, I think that's the real legacy of Billy Haynes' story, that we are getting back into a time when perhaps that would just become part, again, of what constitutes an actor's life, and that it won't be seen as something so important that's going to color how we treat them for the rest of their career.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
William Mann is the author of Wisecracker, The Life and Times of William Haynes, Hollywood's first openly gay star. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.